I think anybody can find creativity at any age.
The voice you just heard belongs to Katie Willis.
Okay, my name's Katie Willis. I have been painting about a year and a half. I paint abstracts in acrylics, too.
Who joined me as one of three artists from Local Colors Art Gallery. Katie Willis arranged for me to also meet with Bill Reed.
My name is Bill Reed. I am the president of Local Colors of Utah Gallery, Art Gallery. I do abstract acrylic work.
And Jeff Clay.
Okay, I am Jeff Clay. I've been in the gallery for over 10 years, so I am the senior member, I guess you might say. I'm also the vice president on the board. And I've been I'm a photographer. So I shoot both travel and landscape photography as well as architecture. I really like to photograph anything. For me, photography is a way to explore the world around me and then to, in fact, really reinterpret it.
In the basement of Local Colors Art Gallery, to talk art, process, media, and response. I'm your host, Liz Christensen, and it's all in the telling. Welcome to episode 26 with my guests Bill Reed, Katie Willis, and Jeff Clay from Local Colors Art Gallery. Listen through to the end of the episode to hear the episode extra, a walkthrough of the upstairs of the gallery with Bill Reed showcasing other artists on display.
Local Colors Art Gallery.
Yeah.
Is it only local artists then?
Yes. We're only local artists. If you moved into the area and you're living here, you're local.
Is that, right, yeah. You don't have to be born here.
You don't have to be born here or anything. But we want local artists. Part of it, although you can buy out of it, but part of your job is sitting here at the desk. So here we have an artist at the desk. We're all we have is an artist at the desk.
You're serving your time, right?
And that's exactly how we feel. Because we'd much rather be painting. Of course, he does things on computers, so he can work a little bit at the desk. Some people do small things. I can't paint here. I just make a mess. So we don't want to make a mess in our gallery. But yeah, so that's it. It's local artists. Actually, you can come in and see a local artist. Anyone at the desk is an artist. So
so no matter when you show up, you're going to talk to somebody who's artist here.
Yeah, unless it's their mother, or I saw that one time, or their wife or their husband.
They're delegating
sometimes. I think next week I have three shows going on at the same time. I don't know how I'm going to be all three places, so, but I'll figure it out. You know, you just figure it out, kind of thing out as an artist. So, we're a co-op. We're all places owned by the artists. We just try to keep the doors open, and we all try to sell as much as we can, obviously, but at the same time enjoy being here. So, and it is good. We have a great group, and it's eclectic.
Talk to me, like, what even is this co-op? What is it? What is an artist co-op gallery even?
Yeah, so we the artists own the gallery, okay, and the gallery makes no profits, just the artists.
Okay.
So that's the co-op part of it. So it is a co-op, but you all vote on everything.
So when you're president and you're vice president, mm-hmm. the entire co-op is part of the board?
Well, the board talks. Okay, the board talks, and then everybody gets to vote.
Okay, so everybody...
So we don't, everything that you encounter... You know, everything you encounter in running a business of any kind may not require a conversation with everybody. Because it's an obvious, go do it. Don't waste other people's time. So the artists always want to have a short, concise meeting. To do that, the board gets together and says, oh, yeah, this is worthy. We have to vote on this. Or no, we don't need to. So, not in the said, if someone wants to... We'll do it. You know. So we'll mention everything we talked about real quickly. And if someone wants to talk about that as well, we can do that. But usually people say, okay, let's get to the meat of just keeping the doors open.
Sure.
So all the artists are involved in doing that.
How many artists are in the co-op?
It runs around 15. Sometimes we have more. Sometimes we have less. Like right now we could use Some more 3D art. We could use some more 3D artists. We'd like another jeweler if we could find one.
Are you? You're not counted as a 3D artist, even though your texture, right?
These are the 2D. So
okay.
These are 2D artists, and we could use another 2D artist. So, we have room for more. But, you know, it seems to, you know, rotate through around about 15. But we could also go up to, I guess I'm counting something like 18. I think 20 would be too many, but we'd give it a try, probably.
An artist joins the co-op after being juried in.
We actually have somebody coming today to be juried in after this. You bring some work and you sit in front of a panel of some of our artists and they look at your work and decide if, you know, it fits the gallery.
Bill does large abstract panels and he paints with knives.
So, I mean, because most of the time if you look around, paintings are sometimes smaller, you know. And I worked in a different gallery for a while, you know, as a member, as another co-op. And all theirs were very tiny compared to mine. And so I just got to, in my mind, I do big. But then I actually love it because I can actually show the larger ones on that spectrum. So one is, you know, 48 inches by 72 that I'll be bringing in, and that's four, you know, it's like 4 feet by six feet. Yeah, so yeah, you know, that's not approaching mural size. I haven't tacked a mural size yet.
At what point does it become mural size?
Because it's the whole wall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
no,
when you picture a wall, yeah, don't fit in a size. When you do a whole wall, you've done a mural. So I do abstracts and they look better large. But most of the ones hanging in museums are even larger than the ones I've done. I think the largest one I've done was 6 feet by 13 and a half.
What makes it a panel and not a canvas?
Yeah, panels are wood. Canvas are something like wood. You know, there's all sorts of aqua board, clay board, all sorts of different medium, and they're all for different types of medium. And so acrylic paints actually sometimes is a watercolor. Most people don't think of acrylic paint as a watercolor, but it can be used as a watercolor. So you want to use like an aqua board for that or something like a clay board for that. But if you're painting really hard, like I do, with knives, I never used a brush in my life. And you're painting with knives, you know, and pellet knives and all sorts. You want to really, in your, do a lot of texture, you want a board underneath. So it's wood. And then you put on that gesso, which is an adhesive, and then you put on a sealant, and then on that you paint.
Okay.
So it's and that's what some people call a gesso board. Okay. So it's all a matter of what, you know, I go into there and I go, this looks good, and I walk out with it. You know, that's what I do. So I used in high school pellet knives. So when I went as an adult, I started using pellet knives. But then I found that I really liked found objects. And I paint with found objects. And I paint with things. I go to Home Depot. And I get Home Depot. I get a scraper that's used for concrete. Or I get something with teeth on it that's used for who know what. I don't know. I'm not a construction expert. But I get these pieces, and that's what I paint with. So it gives me a lot of texture. I like a lot of textures in my painting. So I put a lot of paint on, and then I take away paint with these found objects. And my paintings are emotionscapes. So I go towards the canvas or panel with an emotion. I leave 2 days later, 6 hours later, I don't know how long later. I have no idea. I look at the painting. I wasn't there when it was painted.
You're just exercising it out?
No, I'm not there. So I don't have any idea what is actually done during the process.
That sounds meditative.
It is sort of meditative, I think. It's a way of freeing myself of anything I'm feeling. And so it's getting the emotions spent. So I call my paintings emotionscapes for the most part. But then I do a series where I'm more focused and I do things of landscapes. And I have done a series of womenscapes where I take models and press them up against the canvas and trace them. And I trace them in different positions.
A person?
Yeah, yeah. You just trace them with a pencil. You know, you put them in different positions. They're on a ladder. They're not on a ladder.
Like we used
they're
to
They're facing
do
left. They're facing right.
Like chalk on the ground on the sidewalk as a kid?
Yeah, exactly. But done on a canvas.
And then when you do it, usually I have the, you know, so they don't have to lie down. I have them standing up, right? And they're standing up on, you know, sometimes they're wearing high heels, sometimes they're on the ladder, sometimes they're left and then the right. But what you do afterwards when you're done, and you got all these lines, right? You turn it horizontal instead of vertical. You turn it horizontal and you have a landscape. And then sometimes I ask the model to choose the colors for the landscape. Sometimes I don't want to. But you know, it's an interactive process. So it's they're womenscapes is what I call them. So I do them, and I am conscious there because I am tracing, and I'm very careful tracing. Yeah, a full range of different types of paintings I do, but mostly my paintings are highly textured. Womenscapes tend to be less textured. But, you know, you use less tools then, right? You don't have to. But I still kind of paint heavy. But sometimes I just finished one with oil pastels, crayons, paint. But I do mixed media. Sometimes I paint with metal, which is like interesting to do with canvas. And then you spray it with acid so it rusts. So the rusting is what causes the painting rather than. Then so you have to know.
You're like carefully eroding it?
Yes, carefully eroding the paint that you applied to the painting. And if you use copper, then you use a different kind of acid, and that gives patina, right?
Oh, it's called
patina.
Yeah.
So it turns like blue, or you can use a different kind that makes it turn gray, green, and then, you know, the rust on the iron. And then, so, you know, I like to experiment with my painting process. Art is a process to me.
Bill's first experience painting in high school makes a great story.
In high school, I painted for a while. Matter of fact, my art teacher gave me a canvas. Well, actually, I bought a burlap. It was painted on burlap, but he gave me everything else.
Was this a required class?
Yeah, it was a required class, and it was a large painting. Once again, it was the first painting I painted. It was large, and it was burlap, so it was cheap. Okay, and then I applied a lot of paint to it. At the end of the year, I rolled it up. It wasn't, you know, framed. I rolled it up, stuck it in my arm, and started walking out. And he goes, "Whoa, Mr. Reed, come back here." I said, "Well, what?" He goes, "I haven't given you a grade." I said, "Oh, great. I'll unroll it. Give me a grade." He goes, "You're not done." And I was like, "Oh, wait a minute. What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you can't leave, but the building is looking like that." And we argued for like 6 hours, finally do his credit, not mine, but his credit. He says, "I'll bring the other two teachers in." Okay?
Oh, so you're going to get juried into
If they agree with you, then I'll let you take it home. If they agree with me, you have to change the buildings. Okay, so I'm like, okay, this sounds terrible, but I'll do it, right? So picture the painting, foreground, trees, middle ground, I think they were Russian Orthodox churches, background, a brilliant sky, absolutely brilliant sky. So the next teacher comes in and goes, "Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with the buildings. I don't like the trees." The third teacher came in and said, "No, the trees are fine, the buildings are fine, I don't like the sky." And so I rolled it up again, put it under my arm, and started rolling out. He goes, "Mr. Reed, where are you going?" I go, "Well, they didn't agree with you." And he goes, "They didn't agree with you either." So after that, I became a mathematician. And I worked for the federal government for 34 years. And then as nearing retirement, 17 years ago, I was 50, my ex-wife was telling me, you need to have a hobby when you retire. You know, you need something to. I said, "I'm going to paint." She says, "You haven't painted since high school." Well, this wasn't true. I think I painted two paintings in college, but you know, it was close to true. And I said, "Okay, I'll start painting." And so I painted a picture of the Spiral Jetty, and I painted something of Lake Powell, and I was just really enjoying doing that. And then when I finally retired, I started, because that was like one, two paintings a year for about 5 years. And then I retired and I started painting. Oh, something like, you know, 30, 40 paintings a year.
Jeff said he uses his camera to reinterpret. He also told me he uses it to explore and discover. Those three things were such a simple explanation of his photography, but as we talked, I thought they were a very elegant way to summarize his process.
When I use it to explore, I use it to explore and then discover and reinterpret. And so, being in the field, and I'm always, whether it's in a built environment like New York City, which I love to go to, or it's in southern Utah, or it's in Laos or Myanmar or India or wherever, I like to explore, and I have different concepts in mind. I'll think of, you know, patterns and angles and juxtapositions and composition. That's all happening. And then when I get home or get to the hotel or wherever I'm staying, I'll start processing the images, start looking for winners from that day right off the bat. And I'll often find that I'll reinterpret the image to some degree. It may be like converting to black and white, or it may be that I'll accentuate something that I hadn't seen in the image originally. It may just be bringing, if I'm photographing a person, making that person really stand out from the background. So you have to do that in the digital darkroom. Camera's just going to shoot pretty much straight. But the darkroom, in other words, using Lightroom or Photoshop, is where you have to interpret it.
I was going to ask, which program are you?
I use Lightroom and Photoshop. So I start, my workflow is, and I've taught on my workflow before, but I start in Lightroom and I end in Lightroom. And from Lightroom, we'll bring it into Photoshop. And in Photoshop, I have other tools I use. I can spend easily a half hour on one image. And if I am shooting on, when I'm traveling, I'm shooting, I could be shooting 2,000 images in a day. So you can see that I'm processing forever, essentially. In fact, I'll be posting online. And people say, I didn't know you were in India. And I'm saying, well, I'm not. I'm in Salt Lake. I was in India a year ago, but I'm still working on the images. So I'm constantly going back and looking through my files and finding new images. Oh, I didn't see that, or I forgot about that, or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe this is a poor analogy, so correct me if it is. But it seems like I was thinking that as a photographer, maybe your medium that you're working with is just like your natural environment, but it makes it sound like your photos are also kind of your base medium, and you're kind of going after the fact and like, this is the image instead of like blue acrylic or whatever that I'm going to play with. And then what you're really doing afterwards, after having shot it.
I think that's really, that's a good way of putting it, because I've had this discussion with other photographers, and you'll get a range of opinion that there are people that say, well, what you shoot is what you should present. I adamantly, at least for me, don't agree with that. I think that you shoot the image and you print it out, and that's all there is to it. And that's never been the case. If you go back and look at the old masters, the people who were shooting film, Ansel Adams, and they worked in a dark room forever. There's a story about one photographer, how he was working on I forget which one it was. He was photographing a vegetable, of all things, a bell pepper. He worked for 2 weeks to print that image. He shot it, obviously, on film, and he had a stack of rejected prints off to the side. I don't know how many, 50, 100, whatever. Before he finally got the one that works. So when people say, well, you shouldn't really spend time working in Photoshop, you just need to, you know, take the image, and if you do it right in camera, it'll be right coming out of camera. It's not the case for me. Others, your mileage may vary. But if you look at the guys that have been there before us, they, guys and gals, they all worked on their image for a long time.
In addition to asking Jeff about his process and the programs he uses, I asked him about what camera he uses to shoot.
The camera doesn't matter.
Oh, I like that idea, but tell me why it doesn't matter.
Well, because these days, as long as you have a camera that is, even if you have an old camera, an old film camera, and you know how to use it, it's really about how you use it. So I like to tell the story that I didn't make this up, but somebody got invited to a dinner, and they said that that was a wonderful meal. What kind of stove do you have? And it didn't have anything to do with the stove. It had to do with who was using the stove. These days, having a good camera is important, but more important is knowing how to use it. If you look at my work, you can't tell whether it's Canon, Nikon, or Pentax. You know, you like it or you don't like it based on different things.
Katie became an artist later in life, and more recently than Jeff or Bill.
But I started painting when my daughter went off to school in Hawaii, and she was an art major and had never thought of myself as creative or artistic at all. But I was missing her, and I'd sit in her room and I'd look at her art supplies, and I just decided to start one day. Tried all sorts of different things, but when I tried abstracts, I just fell in love with it. I found what makes me feel alive. So I've just been gung-ho since then, and it was like 4 months after I started painting abstracts that I approached the gallery and asked to be juried in, and I don't know, I've done lots of shows since then, and just, I mean, I've got a show in LA coming up in April, and I'm just loving painting, so it's been really fun.
How many years then is this since you started?
A year and a half.
How did that happen so fast?
Honestly, my family doesn't know where I came from. they're surprised by it too, but it's just, I don't know, I found what I love to do, and so I want to do it, you know? Yeah, it was just a switch in me, just, I don't know.
All three of these artists have something important in common. They all seem to me to be highly engaged, even enamored, with their process.
So when some people ask me what kind of art I do, you know, rather being abstract, because a lot of people call my work abstract, I just say it's process art. I mean, I might be wrong, but I consider this my painting is sort of like done in a dark room. I'm processing the original idea over and over again with paint, but not. I don't have film. I don't have digital. I just go through a process with paint.
Since you like texture, I'm assuming you're not using a lot of water with your acrylics.
I'm usually adding something to make the paint thicker. And there's all sorts of mediums for acrylic that you can add. You can put in glass beads. Actually, the best beads are the acrylic beads. You put these little tiny acrylic, and it gives it, you can put in lava.
Crushed up lava rock?
Yeah, I think one upstairs is like that. I put in crushed up lava rock. And then you can put in different things to make get your texture that you want. And it's just the process, right? So you say, okay, I'm adding glass beads. Well, what is that going to do? I'm not sure. We'll see, you know. One painting, I made it very thin, and you can see each individual bead if you look really closely. And sometimes I made it really thick. So I had to see the beads, I had to take a picture and zoom in. Because it was, you know, but then once you zoomed in, you could see them. But or get real close to the camera. when I have glasses, so, you know, it's better for me to zoom in with a camera, right? So I zoom in with a camera to see. But, you know, that's the eye. So things you add and things you do make a process for painting. But I'm doing a lot of different things, which some people have always hesitated to say, Bill, you should find your niche and do only this. And I'm going, but no, I never found that in my life. So how am I going to find that in my work? So I just do what I do and experiment. And I think, well, you know, it's the best thing is when your first painting is experimentation. And if you lose that, I really have lost the purpose of painting, I think.
Katie, where do you fall in all of this? Are you a begin with the end of in mind person?
No, not usually. I mean, I do a few mountains or flowers that, you know, I want to look like a mountain, you know, or kind of look like a mountain. But I like process in there too, where you just start and you put down marks and then you react to those marks and say, oh, I like how that looks, or I like the shape of that. And then you cover up stuff and then you put more stuff on and then you cover more stuff up. And yeah, all my paintings are layers and layers and layers. And it's just kind of reacting how Bill talks about, you know, not being there when it's happening more. I'm just like inside myself. I'm like tapped into my inner self, not really my subconscious, but kind of like that, you know? And I feel like it's very meditative. It is a great way to find parts of me that I didn't know I had. What I really loved about it before was finding this creative side of me that, you know, I didn't know existed. I feel like each painting I find more things that are me. And so each painting is like a little piece of me and my, I don't know, psyche or something, you know. I use paintbrushes mostly, but I do a lot of scratching and taking away and lots of crayons sometimes and wax pastel or these paint sticks that I love that are actually like automotive markers, whereas like oil sticks don't react well with acrylic. These paint sticks work pretty well with acrylic. And so like I wasn't ever taught in art. So it was mostly self-taught. I've taken some courses online since to kind of refine my composition. And so I don't follow the art rules.
What is it that you're like, oh, that was the thing. Here's what I was feeling. Here's what I was thinking. Like, what does it mean to you, I guess?
Well,
after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can find stuff after the fact that I'm like, oh yeah, that was this memory, or that was trying to evoke this feeling. When I first started, I was just trying to get in touch with all the things that I liked as a child, to find, kind of erase all the adult stuff that you feel like you have to do. How I paint is kind of like abandoned and not like, not very precise or meticulous. It's just kind of like a child, kind of just go for it.
I enjoyed talking with Katie, Jeff, and Bill about their art. But this is art you need to see, not just hear about. Of course you should pay a visit to Local Colors in Sugar House. But you can also hop over to the new In the Telling podcast channel on YouTube to see segments of Jeff, Katie, and Bill and I discussing their work right there in the gallery. None of the content in those segments is a repeat of what's been included in this episode, and the art is well worth taking the look. The link to the YouTube channel will be included in the show notes. Thank you to my guests, Jeff Clay, Katie Willis, and Bill Reed.
Bill, thank you so much for showing me around the gallery. Uh-huh. And it was a pleasure to interview you and Jeff and Katie.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
We enjoyed doing it.
Good.
You can find out more about In the Telling at LizzyLizzyLiz.com. Theme music by Gordon Vitas. In the Telling is hosted and produced by me, Liz Christensen. Thanks for listening.
You might notice that we have
scarves downstairs.
Yes, scarves. That's fiber art, is the terminology we use. We have jewelry that's, as well. We have these sort of engraving type things that are being done. Her husband is a paleontologist. She has a feel for ancient life. So, yeah, that's kind of good. And then we have people who do actually jewelry. Some galleries won't allow jewelry. They won't allow this or that. They make a distinction. But here, if it's art, it's art. You know, and we do jury people in. But if we all feel comfortable, it's art. You know. We try like to actually get some like Adam's stuff is very, very new and modern.
Adam at the desk.
And here's his work. And Adam at the desk, he does this all on a computer. You know, he's not, but it's art, right? But it's a computer. And he runs up, you can ask him what program he uses and how he does that. But it's all done on the computer, and then it gets printed. And it's like photography. Digital photography, he can make many prints, but he limits his prints to a certain number.
Sure, so that it's...
So that you're actually getting a series, one of a series. So, but anyway, it's different. It's digital art. It's art. It's obviously, to me, very pleasing and very nice to look at. And so, something like this with all this depth, I'm envious because...
That's a lot of paint for you to get that kind of depth.
Right, exactly. And this would be extremely tedious. And I was just like, the way I look at it is... what Brian Eno's Music for Airports was done digitally, and then a band just recently played it with instruments. And it was extremely difficult to get the same sound out of instruments as he did digitally because of the vertical color of sound. And this is Nina. She does pottery. So we have pottery. We have pottery over here as well. And then she also does paintings. So, yeah, so we have how could we forget Lawrence?
Lawrence is one of your 3D artists.
He's one of our 3D artists. He's out there, you know? He's out there. But to me, it's amazing stuff. It's like, I mean, if you read what he's done, every one of them has a key in them. There's different aspects of what he's trying to put together to make us... art. I mean, sometimes it's more like he has some that are ray guns and spaceships and things like that. They're more recognizable, more representational art, rather than these, which are more compositional abstract. You know, so I mean, they're objects, but the ways he put them together is unique, right? And that's, he has unique names for everything. Like this one here, to me, looks like it comes out of an old sci-fi movie. Right? It's just, comes out of his mind, but, it has that feel of an old sci-fi movie. So, yeah.